Welcome to the MMA Road Show, episode number 96. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee, well, he's not here right now. Cole Coffee is back home in Las Vegas. I am in Denver, Colorado for a UFC on Fox 23, Shevchenko versus Pena. And I guess I'm going to be a little more accurate about that. I'm actually in Lakewood, Colorado right now, a suburb outside of Denver, just to the west, that is playing host to the fighters and UFC staff here at the Sheraton Denver West Hotel. Came in earlier this week for UFC on Fox 23. It's cold up here. If you guys know anything about my clothing game, it's a lot of khaki shorts just because, I don't know, they're comfortable. And that's not flying so well up here. I need to pay closer attention to the weather report before I go anywhere. It's cold up here. Man, it's a gorgeous city, but it's damn cold. I need to pay attention to the weather when I go to Brooklyn. I have a feeling this makes me think ahead a little bit for a couple of weeks from now. So, listen. Going to talk about UFC on Fox 23, but first, did want to mention, since we didn't do anything and a half for Bellator 170, it was just that kind of a week, I did want to talk about things briefly. I know we're a couple days removed from that card, but just did want to talk about it briefly. First off, of course, the ongoing issue there was Tito Ortiz versus Chael Sonnen at work, and I got to say, I don't think it was. I watching the fight live, I certainly did not think it was a work. First of all, well, before we get into the reasons, I guess let me say this. I will say this. The magnificent one, Steven Morocco, was watching the fight right next to me. We were both on press row. And I fortunately was had a second. Well, I usually am doing play-by-play for UFC events. I was actually doing an editor shift during that. So it was more my job to kind of load in the recaps and just get everything on the website. So while I'm normally doing play-by-play cage side, I wasn't doing that for Bellator. So during the main event, I was actually able to watch a little bit more. I had caught up. We had posted all the stuff from Paul Daly's incredible knockout of Brennan Ward. Man, what a hell of a highlight that was. And I was able to kind of sit back and focus on the fight a little bit. I kind of wanted to soak it in. Tito Ortiz's final fight, say what you will about the man, but he is an MMA legend, man. He's played a huge part in building the UFC. So I kind of wanted to sit back and enjoy it a little bit and soak in the moment, and I did so. And as I watched the fight, I will say this. I picked Chael Sonnen going into that fight, and I picked him. If you did listen to the pre-fight show, I picked him just because I thought it was the right pick. I mean, Tito Ortiz, with all his injuries he's had and all the issues that he's had over the years, I just didn't think we had much of a version of Tito Ortiz left, to be honest with you. But man, all week long, his motivation, his focus, the things he was saying, it really kind of had me believing it. And I almost swayed to the other side, but then I checked myself and I thought, man, Tito Ortiz tells us this every time, right? This is the old Huntington Beach bad boy. I'm motivated. I'm dialed in. I had the best training camp ever. You know, he tells you that over and over. And then the fight happens and you find out, you know, he just had his leg amputated a week before. And luckily they sewed it right back on in time for the fight. You know what I mean? He's always got some kind of injuries afterwards. And so I didn't buy into it. And I stuck with Chael Sonnen. But I'm telling you, the size difference between those two men is incredible. It is incredible. It's kind of tough to tell from the stare down pictures and things that they had during the week, because Chael does that thing where he kind of leans in, and since he leans in, he leans down a little bit, and so it looks more, aggravated. I guess that's not the word I'm looking for. Whatever. You know what I mean? It looks bigger than it actually is. That's what she said. No. So anyway, but when you see those two together, it really did seem like Tito was the bigger guy, and I did think that maybe I had made a poor decision. And then as this fight unfolded, obviously that turned out to be true. But what I was saying this as I was watching the fight unfold, I did look over at Steve Morocco. Once the fight had been reversed, the positions had changed, and Tito Ortiz had gotten on the back. I did look at Steven and say, why is Chael not fighting the hands right now? Why is he not fighting the hands? The arm was around the neck. Now, the full choke hadn't been locked in yet, but the one arm was kind of in place already. It was in a dangerous spot. It's in a spot where you don't want to leave an arm trapped under the neck where just one little grasp can change everything. You know, you want to pull that thing down right away. You don't want to wait for everything to be locked up before you start battling the hands. And I said, why is Chael not pulling that arm away? Just looked way too complacent in the position. And then sure enough, Tito Ortiz locked it in, and that was that. you know, Chael Sonnen, listen, he's lost his share of fights by submission, so it should be no surprise when he loses a fight by tap out. So I just didn't get the whole, maybe this was a work. And first of all, if you know Chael Sonnen, man, that guy is a competitor. And sure, he's had his share of losses, but I just can't see him agreeing to a work. I really can't see him. And the promotion's not going to do it for a number of reasons. I mean, first of all, the promotion's not going to risk their promoter's license. I mean, no way Bellator themselves is going to be involved in that for that simple reason alone. And even then, more so than that, let's say you don't think they have morals and you don't think they think about the future. Even then, I mean, why would you put over a guy in Tito Ortiz who's done? You know, Chael Sonnen has five more fights, including that big fight with Wanderlei Silva, which I'm sure they're going to do anyway. But, you know, wouldn't it have been even more interest if Chael was coming off a win? So just wanted to get my piece in on that since we didn't get to touch on it and a half. I had to get that out there. Now, a couple of things I did want to talk about from Bellator 170. It was a big event. You know, they've had a couple big ones over there. Their tent poles are fun events. They're big events. They've got another one in San Jose that Cole Coffey and I will be at, Bellator 172, here in a couple of weeks. But they're still having a little bit of growing pains. You know, they want to be a big organization. They're certainly the number two organization in the space right now. But I know they want to continue going up. I've never heard him say, we're going to take out the UFC. But I know they'd like to be on an even playing field with him. And they still have some operational issues behind the scenes. Those are things that really won't affect the product as far as a viewer. So it's not things that, you know, the average fan would ever notice. But I can tell you just from the coverage aspect and what it takes for journalists to get their job done and to want to come back and to, you know, to enjoy being a part of it, you know, I think there are some operational issues they could work on and tighten up just to make things better, to take everything to the next level. So I do think that, you know, that's still a little bit of some growing pains there. We did, as we kind of teased the other day, it does sound like they're bringing on a former UFC PR rep to help out in that aspect. So There you go. Somebody that might be able to share the system even more. What's already been established, what works, what doesn't work, to maybe help Bellator move forward. So that's something that, you know, they're just, I think, having some growing pains as they continue to try to get to the next level. But something else that I thought was kind of interesting. It made me think a little bit. Man, those tent pole event production values. I gotta say, I think I'm changing my mind on these things a little bit. I kind of like the big walk-in entrance, the production board. I mean, it's that old Pride style, right? Maybe it's the nostalgia setting in because, you know, we still have it a little bit. You know, when we watch Risen or whatever else, you know, I mean, we see it every now and then. But to have it on a regular basis, it is pretty cool, man. The added lighting. I did think they could, it sounds silly, but I did think they could bring the sound up a little bit. I thought the sound production quality and volume wasn't as good as the UFC. But, you know, it's funny. The UFC, I think, for the longest time really wanted to make sure that they weren't associated with professional wrestling in any way whatsoever. And those big walkouts with the video board and the specialized, you know, intro packages and all those things, you know, I think for the longest time they wanted to shy away from it because it just looked too much like a wrestling event, and they wanted to make sure people knew, no, this is real. This is not scripted, okay? This is a real event. And I still love the UFC for being a sporting event, but I do wonder now that, well, I don't know. I was going to say now that people know it's not fake anymore, but we just talked about whether a fight was fixed or not. But I think, you know, people at least differentiate it from professional wrestling. And now that it is being differentiated from professional wrestling, I do wonder if, hell, maybe steal a little bit of that. Maybe go back to that production value a little bit. I mean, WME-IMG is in the entertainment business, right? I mean, that's what they do. And they're in the live event production business. They produce a hell of a lot of concerts and live events around the world. So it's not like they're any stranger to how to do creative presentations. So I do wonder if maybe that would be something worthwhile for them to steal a little bit of those production elements and kind of ramp it back up. I mean, I don't want it to look like a pro wrestling event. I don't even want it to look like Pride. It's not Pride, you know. It's the UFC. It is still the premier organization in mixed martial arts. Whether it's your favorite or not, that's debatable. Of course, it's certainly everybody's opinion. But you certainly can't take away from their market size. But I do wonder if maybe a little bit of that production value would be something that people would welcome. You know, give people more of a show. I don't know. Let me know what you think. I can't bounce it off my man Cole Coffee since he left me high and dry. Should say not his fault. Our man Justin Park, who really works behind the scenes on our video team more so than at events, actually lives here in the Denver area. He lives up in Breckenridge, where he said it was even colder and snowing and all kinds of stuff. So to save a couple of bucks for the company, he is handling video duties this week. And Cole Coffee staying at home. I know that he probably is enjoying a little time off the road. He's actually got a girlfriend to go home to right now. I don't, with my wife and kids still in Mexico, so he probably values that time at home, whereas me, I'm just like, hey, get me back on the road. So anyway, all right, listen, we are on the road for UFC on Fox 23. I did fly in yesterday morning. If you want to make fun of me, I am a American Airlines loyalist, and I do so because bottom line is I fly a lot, and since I do it all on one airline, they take care of me. They put me up in first class a lot, and I'm not going to lie, I've kind of become a bougie, spoiled brat when it comes to that. So much so that American Airlines does not fly to Denver from Las Vegas. Not direct, anyway. So I actually connected from Las Vegas to Phoenix before going to Denver. Did that, flew in on Wednesday morning as soon as we got here. Got in and did a handful of interviews. You know, we like to get in and do things a little bit early. Sat down with a couple of people, and one of those guys was Jason Knight. I got to say, man, Jason Knight, he's Team Morgan, or I'm Team Knight. I don't know how you put that. You know, certainly we you can't play favorites in this game. And, hell, I'm a big fan of his opponent, Bruce Leroy, too. But, you know, Jason Knight is somebody that I have enjoyed watching fight so far. I just love hearing the kid give interviews. I love seeing the way he fights. He's nonstop aggressive. He's relentless. He's young. And he's opening up the main card here in Denver. He's going to be on Big Fox. And the UFC didn't have him at the open workout. So I said, you know what? Got to give me a few minutes with my man Jason Knight. And I figured, hell, let me bring that to you guys. He's kind of a roadshow favorite now. So sit back, relax, and hear my conversation with Jason Knight.
Well, last time we saw you was not that long ago, a couple months. You had a good fight with Dan Hooker. Obviously, you were tired at the end of it. That's for sure. A little bit exhausted. Just talk about the experience of that fight and kind of, you know, what lessons you took out of it.
I got a little tired in the fight because I have a deviated septum. I was trying to get it fixed before I fought again, but obviously, you know, it didn't work out. I got a short notice fight, so had to take it. And, you know, if I get tired in this fight, I will. My heart's going to push me through it just like it did last time. But, man, it was a fun fight with Dan Hooker. The guy talked a little bit of trash before the fight and kind of made it like a grudge match, made me want to hurt him. And so I went out there and I dominated. You know, I beat him first and second round nice and easy. Third round was a little harder because, like you said, I was tired. But, you know, I pushed through it and went out there and got my hand raised.
I wonder, you know, they come to you with a short notice fight. You talk about, you admit it, you were tired. They say, hey, we want you to go fight in Denver. You know, we want you to go fight in Elevation. Did that factor into your decision at all? Like, hey, man, my cardio was kind of an issue this last time. Now they want me to go fight up in the mountains.
Nah, man, I don't care if they call me on 2 days' notice and want me to fight, you know, anywhere in this world, I'm going. You know, that's just the way I am. I'm not going to turn it down regardless. Alex Caceres is going to be a tough test. It's a big opportunity for me. I go out here and get my hand raised. It's three in a row, and time to negotiate a new contract. And, you know, whenever you get three in a row, and now it's time to negotiate more money, hell, I get more money. And I'm going to negotiate to the fullest and try and get the best out of what I can get.
Very nice. Talk about the deviated septum. How does that impact you? I mean, does it make it tough to breathe, like, all the time?
Yeah, most of the time I stay with a stopped-up nose, and, you know, it's something I've learned to deal with. Whenever I can breathe in and out of my nose, it helps out a lot better. I can recover my wind a lot better. But, you know, it seems like every time during the fight, after that first round, I can't breathe out of my damn nose because I guess I got punched in it or something, and it gets closed off. And, you know, all it does really is just makes the recovery a little harder. But, you know, it doesn't really bother me because I know that regardless, hey, I've got 10 more minutes. You know, we're still going to do 10 more minutes regardless of whether I'm breathing or holding my breath or whatever. You know, if I can't hold my damn arms up, my heart's going to push me through the rest of that 10 minutes.
Very nice. So surgery on it at some point, but only if they quit offering you fights for a little bit?
That's it, yeah. You know, it sucks. And, I mean, I'd like to get surgery. I'd like to try and get it fixed. But at the same time, hey, if I got a chance to go make some money, got a chance to try and climb that ladder, I'm going to do it every time. And, you know, after this fight, I'm going to ask for another fight as quick as possible. And if they give me, you know, time to get my nose fixed, good. If not, then I will. I'm going back for the next one as soon as they call.
Very nice. All right, so they offer you Alex Caceres. You said it's a good opportunity. So, I mean, you have respect for him? I mean, do you break him down?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Kid's tough. You know, he's got a lot of flashy kicks, a lot of crazy-ass spinning techniques. You know, it's going to be something hard to deal with. But, you know, I mean, I know he's probably fought guys that pressure him before and guys that fight hard, but I don't think he's ever fought anybody with the hunger that I have, the determination, the drive that I'm going to bring to this fight. I'm going to hit him hard. I'm never going to stop coming forward. No matter what he hits me with, it's never going to slow me down. And if he can't handle that pressure, I'm going to break him. And, you know, that's nothing against him. I'm not saying that he's going to break easy, but it's just I'm letting you know what I'm coming with. I'm coming with everything I got. And if Alex Caceres ain't ready for it, then I'm just going to take another step up that ladder and go ahead and get my hand raised.
Yeah, it is still real early in your career, and you guys are opening up the Fox portion of the card. Does that mean anything to you, being on Big Fox?
Yeah, man, it's pretty cool to me. I mean, every promotion I've ever fought for, after a little while, I wind up, you know, taking over. I'm, you know, one of the fan favorites, and I don't see why UFC's got to be any different than any other promotion. And, you know, on my fourth fight, I've got a good opportunity to make it where, you know, I gain a lot of fans. Because, I mean, Alex Caceres, he's fought 14 times in the UFC. He's got a big following. This is the man to beat right now. I think he's going to be like my gatekeeper. If I beat Alex Caceres, then, you know, the sky's the limit for me. And, you know, I'm just going to keep being myself regardless. And I think Jason Knight's pretty likable. And, you know, if you don't like me, good. If you like me, thank you. But if you don't like me, oh well, I don't care. I mean, that's just, I'm still going to be me regardless. And I think that eventually I'm going to go down as one of the greats. And that's what the plan is.
That's awesome. So it sounds like you want to make a kind of a quick move up. I mean, you feel like after this, you really should be looking at some of those top contender fights.
Yeah, man. I don't really care to jump way too fast, but, you know, I'll take whatever they give me, whoever they put in front of me. And, I mean, if I beat Alex Caceres, then, yeah, I think, you know, top 20 is open all day. I mean, I don't see why not. Honestly, I want to fight. I believe he's number 11 right now, the Korean Superboy. I want that fight so bad, man, because I watched him fight Cub Swanson, and them two went out there and they put on a battle. And, you know, no matter what they got hit with, no matter how hard they got hurt or whatever, they kept fighting. They kept wanting to be in the fight. And I believe, you know, you put me and him in there and fireworks are going to go off. It's going to be one of them epic battles that everybody talks about for a long, long time. And, you know, as soon as this fight's over, I'm going to call him out and we're going to see if I can get it, you know. And if I do, good. If I don't, then whoever they put in front of me next, you know, you better watch out because I'm coming for him. Anybody that's in that featherweight division, Jason Knight's coming for you, you know. That's just the way I feel about it.
So you've been in these grinding battles, man, these back-and-forth slugfests, you know. Some people say you can't do that forever, but it sounds like for you, you wouldn't want to do it any other way.
That's it, man. I mean, if you're not going out there, if you go out there and you just, you know, dominate the fight, yeah, of course, you still have a little fun. You get your hand raised, whatever. You get your money. But the kind of fights I like to be in is where I get it just as good as I give it. We both get out there, grit our teeth, bang it out, smile and shake hands at the end of it, and we both know that we put on something that the world wants to see. And, you know, I've always been a fight fan since I was 14, 15 years old. And you know what I'm saying? Either you want to see somebody get knocked out quick or you want to see the decisions where they're just both going after it the whole damn time. And I don't care to get a decision fight. I want to go out there and finish, you know, either submission, knockout, whatever. But if I'm going to be in a fight that's going to be a long, tough fight, I want it to be a long, tough fight. I want us to get out there and just try to hurt each other and never stop until the bell rings. You know, me get knocked down, him get knocked down, me get bloodied up, him get bloodied up, and then at the end we smile and respect each other.
Very cool. So a little bit different scenario this time. It's not the grudge match that it was a couple months ago. It sounds like you got a lot of respect for him, but still anticipating a good fight. How do you think you get your hand raised on Saturday?
I think there's, you know, really there's three different ways for me to win. I honestly can't tell you how it's going to happen. I believe, you know, if I go out here and I catch him, you know, I hit him with a good hard punch, I can TKO him, knock him out, finish the fight that way. If we hit the ground, you know, I'm pretty sure that I've got the advantage there. I think I could submit him. And decision's always fun. You know, we go out there, grit it out, and I get my hand raised that way. But, you know, I would love to go out here and put him on his ass, you know, knock him out real quick, TKO him, whatever, hit him with a good hard shot and see if he can take some more.
Very nice. I got to ask you, last time out, you had some choice words about Conor McGregor and his heart. Did you catch some grief for laying that out there?
Oh, God, man. I gave my honest opinion. You know, I didn't sit here and try to get no credit off of Conor McGregor. I wasn't trying to get publicity off of Conor McGregor. They asked me, hey, what do you think about Conor McGregor? I told the world I don't like him. You know, I told the truth. I don't like the guy, never have, never will. Yeah, he's a good fighter. Don't take nothing away from him. I personally don't like him. If you don't like that, oh well, you know. And man, I'm telling you, I got called everything under the book. Everybody told me keep Conor's fucking name out of your mouth, blah, 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 blah. But I mean, you know, if you don't like one man's opinion, then so what? Close your fucking ears, don't listen to my opinion. You know, turn your head, look the other way. I mean, if you can't take somebody talking about your fighter, then quit getting butt hurt. Go on about your business, you know?
So Jason Knight looking for a fight with Duho Choi. Look, sign me up for that one. I mean, he's got a test in front of him in Bruce Leroy, Alex Caceres, but if he can find a way to get through, sign me up, man. Action fights. I love it, man. The next generation, you gotta get on board. You gotta start looking at the young guys, right? Start figuring out the next generation. I should say one more thing about Jason Knight. You know, if you're a loyal listener of the MMA Roadshow, you know that we've kind of teased that we're starting a series about my first fight. And we got a good story from Jason Knight, as you can imagine. Quite the eloquent storyteller that he is. We asked about his first professional fight. But then he went on to tell us about his first amateur fight. Unfortunately, after the cameras were turned off, I will get this story on tape again at some point. But let me just say that he was 14 at the time, and he was fighting inside a dog cage dropped into a boxing ring. No coating on that cage work at all. He said you would rub up against the fence and it would just scratch you up. And yeah, it was just a massive dog cage dropped in a boxing ring. So yeah, that should tell you a little bit something about how he got his start in mixed martial arts. Okay, a couple things real quick. The Ultimate Fighter 25, if you haven't seen already, filming is underway in Las Vegas. Love that season. That's the comeback season, if you will, the all-star season that we reported on MMA Junkie a few months ago. They brought back old cast members of The Ultimate Fighter, and it's my understanding that we will have a confirmed cast list in the next couple of weeks before the show airs. So I know that we've seen some rumored lists out there. To be honest, I know this may sound stupid, but I always try to avoid tough spoilers because I end up having to watch the show anyway. And if I gotta watch the show for work, I'd rather not know what the hell's gonna happen because it just makes it completely. I know it's a tired format as it is, but it's completely uninteresting if you already know who's in the finals. So I try to avoid tough spoilers at all. So therefore, I haven't even paid a lot of attention to the cast member list. But I am understanding that we will get a full cast member list at some point before the show is done airing. But I love the season. I love the concept. Bringing back people from old seasons. See what they still got. See who can do it right in a second chance around it. So, listen, I did want to say one other thing, too, about this Tito Ortiz, Chael Sonnen thing. If you didn't read an article that was on MMA Junkie about John McCarthy was on MMA Junkie Radio, and he actually dove into this topic pretty well. The boys there, Gorgeous George and Goes, they did a great job pushing him. And we wrote a story about John McCarthy wishes he could put fight fix accusers in choke Tito Ortiz used to tap Chael Sonnen. So if you didn't read that article, definitely read that article. John McCarthy, of course, had a better look at it than anybody else, and the man has seen how many matches by now? Good Lord. I can't even think what the math would be on how many matches he's refereed. So definitely worth hearing his viewpoint. Now, something else I want to put out. UFC on Fox 23. You may have seen by now, maybe not, but there are a new set of rules in mixed martial arts, the new unified rules that were approved late last year for use in 2017. But this week they're not in play. They're not in play in Colorado. And I want to point this out. I'm sure it'll be mentioned on the broadcast on Saturday night. You know, these are the definition of a downed opponent. These are how judges should be looking at rounds. I mean, there are a lot of really important rules in here. And they're not going to be in place in Colorado. And this is, to me, I just think it's a horrible, horrible mistake. And to think that we're going to go through each week of the fight year and have to look at different rule sets. That sometimes rules are going to be one way in one state and sometimes they're going to be another way in another state. And without going completely into the whole political system, you know, the ABC, the Association of Boxing Commissions, is not a federally it's not federal oversight, basically. I mean, the states have the rights to change their policies as they will. And some states, like New Jersey, have said that they're not going to change the new rules. They're not going to adopt the new rules. And that's a problem in itself. And I think it points to a need for having a federal oversight committee. At some point, I think we have got to have a federal board that makes changes and everybody follows those changes, whether they want to or not. Of course, they'd all have input. The states would all be able to vote and debate and all the things the way they do now. But at some point, once the rules are done, the federal rule is the one that governs everything. I think this is just silly for the fighters. The fighters, you know, for this week, maybe not so bad. You know, we talked to a lot of the fighters today at the open workout session, and actually it was Casey Lydon from MMA Fighting. He was the one that, in several scrums, he kind of asked the same question to get feedback from these guys. What do you think? You know, what do you think about the new rules? And to be honest, they all said, I don't even know what the new rules are. And it makes sense. I mean, they're only a couple weeks in. It's not going to affect them. So why start studying a new rule set? So I don't know that it will necessarily be a problem at UFC on Fox. Excuse me. Good Lord. UFC on Fox 23. I don't know there'll be an issue. But as fighters, you know, play out 2017 and they have to compete under different rules wherever they go, I think that is a problem. And even more so, I think it's a problem for the referees and the judges. I mean, the fighters are going to fight 2, 3, maybe 4 times if you're Donald Cerrone. And so it's not going to be that hard. You know, they can prepare, they can educate themselves, they can be ready. But these referees and these judges, especially the ones, the traveling ones, maybe not the ones necessarily in a state that are, you know, just kind of working their local area over and over, but the ones that are doing, you know, different locales every week, how do you keep that straight? I mean, this sport moves so fast. You've got to make split-second decisions. Even judging, you're watching a whole round, and then you've got 60 seconds to turn in your scorecards. And you really don't even have 60 seconds to turn in your scorecard. Not sure if you've ever seen it or not, but the way the judges are set up around the cage, there's 3 judging positions. They're all spread out around the cage. And, excuse me, one of the referees will run around to each of those judges' positions and grab their scorecard and drop it off at the table, at the scorer's table, for the scorer to add it up. Well, the thing is, if you're in that first position, the referee is standing right next to you. And so as soon as the bell sounds, that referee is like tapping you on the shoulder like, hey, I need your score now. Now, yes, it only may take, you know, 10-15 seconds for the guy to walk around the rest of the cage. But if you're in that third position, at least you've got that 10 or 15 seconds to kind of think about it a little bit, right? I mean, you can kind of, I'm not sure. You know, when I'm doing my play-by-play on the cage side, you know, I've watched enough fights, I've watched enough rounds. Most of the time, I'm pretty instinctive that I know what I'm going to do. But I'm telling you what, every now and then, I sit there for a minute before I hit publish on that play or update on the page, and I think, hold on, let me go over this in my head real quick. There was that one takedown. Hold on, there was a series of, you know, and I go through it. I may even look back through my play-by-play real quick just to kind of refresh myself. Like, hold on, let me make sure I didn't forget anything. Yeah, weigh that. So even with the judging, there's split-second decisions that have to be made. And if you're having to change a criteria every week, if you're having to change what constitutes a downed opponent and you're a referee and you have to make that call instantly, that's not good. It's not good to be having different rules. So, you know, maybe the casual fan won't care too much about this, but I think it's something for the hardcores to monitor and to think about and to maybe even be reaching out to, you know, their local commissions. You can send some feedback. They are government bodies, and they do have to listen to you. So may not be the most exciting aspect, but something to think about. And it may not affect USC on Fox 23 that much, but it's something to look at and it's something to think about. Now, something that definitely will be a big factor in USC on Fox 23 is the altitude. Of course, we're in the Mile High City, so we're about a mile high in altitude. And I'll tell you what, you know, over time, we've seen this change. And I honestly think the first Mexico City card where Cain Velasquez was absolutely devastated and admitted afterwards, my God, the altitude really got to me. I mean, here's a guy in Cain Velasquez who we thought was, you know, Cardio Cain, right? The guy was always a nonstop machine. And for him to succumb to the altitude, I think that was kind of a big eye-opener for everybody in the game. And I think people really started to take it seriously. Nearly everybody that we've talked to on the card came in early. And from what I understand and talked to people behind the scenes, just about every single person on this card came in at least a week early, if not more. You know, you heard Masvidal went up to Colorado Springs to set up his camp there. That was about a month ago. Sam Alvey actually told us that, you know, he's been sleeping. He came out here, I believe he said, he came out 2 weeks early as well. But even before that, he was sleeping in an altitude tent in his house to get used to the change. So I think it's good to see, refreshing to see that people are taking it so serious. You know, anybody coming from New Mexico, I think people do forget Albuquerque. You do train it out to there. Albuquerque is actually higher in altitude than Denver, which is crazy. It doesn't seem like it, but so you know, you start making that drive and you kind of see how you're constantly moving up. And of course, they can actually go to the Sandia Peak and claim it. You know, train at even higher altitude. So, but just, you know, I know sometimes people are interested in that for wagering purposes or just, you know, something to think about. But it looks like everybody really did take it serious this week. And everybody that we talked to and everybody we heard about, sounds like a lot of people got here weeks in advance, not just a day or two in advance to try to take it early. Now, one guy I don't think made it in early was Alex Caceres, Bruce Leroy. But I'll tell you what, man. He had been up here a little bit not too long ago, and so he had spent a little time snowboarding. He said up here in Colorado before he booked this fight, and then he spent some time training with BJ Penn. And so I mean, I don't think he's going to be out of shape. He's certainly somebody that it sounds like he's been very active lately, and he's somebody that I always enjoy talking to as well. And I figure, hey, you know what? It's only fair play. We spent some time talking to Jason Knight. Let's spend some time talking to Bruce Leroy, because I tell you what, Alex Caceres, unless you want to talk about fighting, especially other people in the sport, because the man straight up admits, and he's very honest, he just does not watch MMA when he's not fighting. So if you want to talk to him about that, if you want to break down other fights, if you want to talk to him about fighting styles and other people in the game, he's not going to be your man for that. But if you want to talk about other stuff, this guy is always fun to me, always intriguing. And so I figured, hey, why not let you guys listen to my conversation with Alex Caceres, the man that will always be better known as Bruce Leroy.
All right, Alex. Well, the last time we saw you was – yeah, you can just look at me.
All right.
Alex, the last time we saw you was in August putting on a heck of a show. What have you been up to since then? I know you like to have some adventures and that sort of thing. What have you been doing?
Not much. I mean, always training. Just getting ready for the next one. But me and my girl, we did do a little traveling, a little road trip, and then we actually came up to Denver before I got this fight booked here in Denver and did some snowboarding. And then right when I got back from Denver, or as we were coming back from Denver, BJ called us and needed some sparring partners for the year fight. So he flew us out to Hawaii. So we were able to double up on the vacation trips. So we got to see Hawaii as well. And then once I touched down in Hawaii, I'm here back in Denver because I got scheduled on a short notice fight. So just been moving around, just same old.
Very nice. Let's talk about the Aaron Rodriguez fight first. I know that this sport is about wins and losses at the end of the day, but I know you are kind of more about the martial arts aspect necessarily than the competition. So when you put on a show like that, and it was such a fun fight, I mean, do you take some pride in that and some lessons out of it? I mean, how do you think about that fight in retrospect?
Well, there's always lessons in the loss, you know. And definitely, I'm still excited about the fight. I would like to have a fight like that again. You know, those are the kind of fights that I enjoy. I'm able to showcase a lot of my abilities, and I feel the harder the opponent is, the more he brings out of me. So it usually calls for a good fight. I mean,
all the fights that I usually had bonuses in, it was usually because it wasn't just me. It was me and the opponent putting on a show. And two of the three bonuses that I won were Fight of the Night bonuses. So that should say a lot. I did win a Submission of the Night bonus, but for the most part, I'm going to put on an exciting fight. Even if I don't win the bonus, my fights are still going to be in contention for that most exciting fight just because of the style that I bring to the table. And if the opponent is good, he'll bring the best out of me as well.
At the end of the day, is that more satisfying to you to put on an exciting type performance like that than to maybe go in and just dominate someone?
In some ways, yeah. In some ways, no. I mean, you always want to win, you know, especially it makes it easier in a capitalistic society we live in. You would want to win to make more revenue and make, you know, push the streets a little bit further away from you. But how would you say? It is satisfying to have a good war with another fellow martial artist, an actual martial artist that you can get in there, have that kind of respect, pour everything out there, leave nothing behind, and it's not personal, you know, like it is a good feeling to be able to do that rather than just, because we train a lot, you know, especially for me. I don't know how anybody else feels, but I train like a motherfucker and I train all the time. So the last thing I want to do is, not the last thing I want to do, don't get me wrong, I'll take whatever finish I can get, but it is satisfying to, you want to spend as much time there as you can because you spend so much time preparing for this moment. I kind of want to make it last sometimes. I'm like, it's not like an adrenaline rush for me. It's not like I get super anked up or angry at the person or hyped up or trying to make it personal. To me, it's something that I truly enjoy doing. I just want to do it. So it shouldn't be so far-fetched that I would rather spend 15 minutes or 25 if I have the opportunity to inside of the octagon rather than 1 minute.
Very cool.
So to speak.
Very cool. You talked about getting a call from BJ Penn. Was that something you were expecting or surprising? How did that come about?
That was out of the blue, you know. He came to Arizona actually first, and then he was talking about it there. He's like, oh, you know, you should come out to California and help me train. And I did a little bit, and then I left California. He flew me back because he left to Hawaii. Didn't hear from him for like 2 weeks. Then he called me up after 2 weeks and says, oh, I want to do more sparring. So he flew me out. It was kind of random.
Was it because you had just come off a fight with Yair Rodriguez, or was it like some kind of personal connection or your ability to mimic Yair? I mean, what was it that he took value out of?
Well, I think it's a little bit of all those things. We did have a previous relationship, and which is on good terms, as well as I did fight Yair last, and he wanted to pick my brain about that, and I was probably the closest person that was in his vicinity to mimic Yair as good as possible. But he's a good guy. It was great. I think that was the reason why, you know. And but other than that, I mean, me and BJ, we get along. We always got along. Even before, I think it was like around after the Ultimate Fighters when I met him, sometime around there, chilling in Vegas.
Nice. So then you do that, and then you get the call for this fight with Jason Knight. I know that you don't necessarily watch the sport all the time. So, I mean, did you know anything about him? Did you know who he was? What happened when you got the call?
And I mean no offense when I say this, of course, but no, I did not know. I literally touched down from Hawaii. I just got in from Hilo into California. And once my plane landed, Abraham, my manager, calls me. He says, you want to fight? Or he texts me, do you want to fight Jason Knight? Do you want to fight Jason Knight on the 28th? And then, you know, he should know the way I am. He knows the way I am. So I just text back, like, why are you even asking me? Like, just send me all the paperwork. And he's like, do you know who he is? And I'm like, I really don't. And it's not disrespect to my opponent. It's just a lot of people, I feel like, aside from this interview, but a lot of interviews, especially pertaining to, like, the mainstream media, as when they're marketing the fight, they want you to like kind of talk crap about the person. They want you to be aggressive in a sense. Like they want to hear that egotistical confidence that you have, the false machismo, I would say. And they try to bring it out of me, you know, and it's hard because I have nothing personal against the person. It's hard for me to make something personal against a person that I don't even know. I never met the guy. I didn't even know him until they announced the fight and booked me for the fight. I had to look him up, to be honest, but I don't watch the sport, and it's not because I don't know him, because he's not good, or I'm pretty sure he's well-renowned within the fighting community. I just don't watch it on TV, so I just don't know anybody unless I've met him in person.
once the fight was put together, I mean, do you go back and watch tape and start to look at him, or do you just trust your coaches to break it down? How do you approach it when it's a guy that you don't know?
Well, I mean, I watched like one of his fights, and I heard one of his interviews, and I seen a couple pictures, but I think that's enough. You know, I don't know. Like, I never try to make a game plan. And when I do it, I don't do too well. I like to go in there and just fight to the best of my abilities. I try to increase every facet of my arsenal. I'm not complacent in just being a stand-up person. I do want to get better at wrestling. I am getting better at wrestling. At least I believe in the lab. They believe it as well. I am becoming a better ground fighter as well as a striker. So to me, as a martial artist, as a person getting into a fight, especially if you don't know the guy, especially if you're a guy that he's never fought before, how in the heck am I going to predict what this guy's going to do to me, because he's never had a person move like me in front of him? He's never had a person that looks like me in front of him, so it's just going to be, it's a little different, so it's hard for me to build a game plan on him. He might stand up and strike with a lot of wrestlers, you know, and a lot of ground guys, but I have reason to believe he might shoot a whole bunch of shots at me just so I won't get off my, you know, punches and kicks. So I try not to think about that, and I just try to go with the flow.
Very nice. Well, from the outside looking in, it looks like your guys' styles are going to match up really well. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I know you always have interests outside of the sport, man. So talk to me about kind of what your latest interests are when you're not training, what you're focusing on.
I've been reading lots of books, a lot of science fiction books. I've been I'm in the Dune series now, Frank Herbert's Dune. I've seen the movies when I was a kid, and I seen the little miniseries when I was younger too, but it totally makes more sense now, I guess, since I have an older mind. I'm reading the book now. It's an epic story. So I'm getting into a lot of sci-fi. I've been into gaming. I mean, I've been into gaming forever, but just downloaded a few new games, so I've just been stuck on gaming and stuff after training. I actually am starting to try and pick up crocheting.
Interesting.
You know, like forms of knitting and stuff like that. It's a, you know, feel like it's a cool thing. Still doing gardening and everything. Got my spinach coming in, my kale's coming in. They're like this big now, like this wide.
Wow, how you really got like that?
Yeah.
You'll be the baddest crochet dude on the planet here pretty soon, huh?
Hopefully, it's hard. It is hard to crochet. But really, I've been focusing a lot on getting better with social media, promoting my brand more. We set up my new website, bruceleroy.com. We're selling shirts. You can see my upcoming fights and my backgrounds and stories and other videos of highlights and whatnot. So I finally got that up and running with the help of Human Weapon, which is these guys right here. But I've been doing that. I've been actually practicing a lot of Tai Chi lately on Sundays with this old guy.
Living the well-rounded lifestyle, man. Knowing that you go into fights without a game plan, it might be tough to ask you for a prediction. But I mean, how do you envision fights when you're? I mean, do you play things out in your head? Do you do any kind of visualization? I mean, what are you expecting on Saturday?
I mean, I definitely think about it, and scenarios do play out in my head all the time. You know, I don't see me losing in that way. I see me winning in many different fashions, but it's hard to see me lose. Like, of course, I do know there's possibilities of loss, and that I can lose, that I'm not impenetrable, I'm not impervious. The guy can beat me, he is a tough guy. But in this fight, the way our styles match up and the way that I know that I am now, it's hard to see me losing. So in terms of the outcome of the fight, I would think of it in terms generally in winning or losing, and I think I see myself winning in this fight.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. From science fiction to crochet, there's nobody quite like Bruce Leroy, man. I love that kid. He's not even a kid anymore. He's been around so long. It's crazy how time flies. And, man, he's a damn seasoned vet at this point. Hey, listen, I should mention, if you like what you're listening and you haven't done so before, do us a favor. Do me and Cold Coffee a favor. Even though Cold Coffee isn't here right now, do him a favor anyway. Log into iTunes. Give us a quick rating, a quick review in there. I'll read your comment. I like the feedback, man. I like it. Positive or negative, don't be afraid. Tell me what's up, I'll read it and take it to heart, man. I really appreciate that stuff. It helps us kind of grow the podcast a little bit. And you know we just do this for fun. We ain't got no sponsors. We ain't getting paid for this. we're just doing it because we like talking MMA, man. That's all there is to it, dude. And I love to grow it and send it out to as many people as we can. So it's always fun, man. There's nothing better than being places around the world and having somebody come up and say they love the podcast, man. There's no better feeling than that, unless it's reading their comments on iTunes. That's a good feeling, too. Okay, so listen, today, as we sit down to record this on Thursday night, as always, was the open workouts here in Denver. We're staying out on the suburbs. This was more downtown, a cool little venue called the Exdo Event Center. That is EXDO. Cool little center down there in the downtown area of Denver, which is hugely revitalized and blowing up at the moment. Not a lot of media there. Not a ton of media, I think, going to be at this event. Of course, you know, there's a lot of big shows coming up, and this one might be not quite as big, and not maybe people aren't tempted to go to Denver when it's 20 degrees outside. But, of course, the major outlets are here. Of course, myself and Justin Park, and even the magnificent one, Stephen Morocco, has made the trip as well. So we're out here, of course, covering things like we do. Sherdog is here. Dave Mandel, he's pretty much the one-man army for Sherdog these days. Casey Lydon is here for MMA Fighting. I think he's kind of pulling the one-man show by himself as well. I didn't see any of their writers out here, so he's handling it. And even his young lady friend Esther Lynn is, I believe, covering boxing right now in Las Vegas, if I recall. So they're doing the one-man show. Did see, though, some local news coverage. Did see the big cameras that the broadcast networks bring in, so it was certainly getting some attention. My Uber driver today, who didn't say anything too stupid, so I didn't record him too much. But he knew all about Donald Cerrone and thought probably that Donald would be in the main event, but not in the headliner, of course, but knew all about. Actually, had met his instructors and some of his coaches, some of Donald Cerrone's first coaches. This guy's a longtime Colorado resident. And it was funny because he was actually mentioning him as Donnie Cerrone, which I have to admit, I don't think I've ever heard anybody call Donald Cerrone Donnie. So that was kind of funny to hear about the history that he had with them and that sort of thing. But so there is some awareness. I think locally it'll do good. Now, I'll say this. MMA Weekly, of course, is here as well. Ken Pishn actually lives here in the Colorado area as well. I think he may be up in the mountains as well. I'm not sure. But he's here. And he was saying something, and it's true. You know, this thing is actually at the Pepsi Center downtown, which the Pepsi Center is the big arena, right? That's where the Nuggets play, the Colorado Avalanche play. I mean, this is a full NBA, NHL size arena. A little surprised that that's where the UFC is going with this card. I mean, even if Cerrone was in the headlining spot, you know, I don't know that he could sell out a massive venue like that. So, they've done a lot of events out here over the years at the Broomfield Event Center. I think it was called the First Bank Center for a while. There's been a handful of cards over the years that have been out here. It's a little further west. It's a little closer out to actually where we are here at the Host Hotel. So a little surprised that the UFC chose to do the big venue. Ken Pishn was one that kind of brought it up to me. And I hadn't really thought about it. Just, you know, going town to town, week to week, I hadn't really thought about it. It's just been kind of hectic since I landed. And as soon as he brought it up, I'm like, brother, you are absolutely right. What the hell are they doing at the Pepsi Center? So I'm going to be interested to see the attendance on Saturday night. I imagine, of course, the upper bowl won't be full. I think it probably wouldn't be open. They probably never intended it to do. You know, maybe they have some great contract arrangement. Maybe they have some. You never know, especially with WMEIMG place in place. You never know what kind of venue deals are able to swing. So there's a lot of things that happen behind the scenes, but it was a little bit surprising that they've chosen that venue. So be interested to see how it looks on TV on Saturday night and how it looks in the building on Saturday night. So, all right, today was the open workouts. Juliana Pena and Valentina Shevchenko, great main event. It's a toss-up to me, man. To me, this is one of those 50-50 fights. I think we're kind of torn right down the middle. I mean, it is. You know, they're both well-rounded mixed martial artists, so you don't I feel like sometimes when you say striker versus grappler, it sounds like it's an insult, but I don't think it is an insult. I don't think it's not meant to be, but I mean, I think this is very much a striker versus grappler type fight, right? One is really strong in one area, and one is really strong in the other area. And, so I think when you sit down to figure out your pick, it's kind of tough because it's just a matter of really who can implement their game plan first, right? I mean, that's it. If Juliana Pena can close the distance, can be relentless and have that pace like she is, she can make it dirty, man. When she fights, the thing about her is her aggression, her relentless nature is so smothering. It looks frustrating to fight against, man. It's like no room to breathe, transition to transition. And you think about it, you know, she's been training in Chicago now, spending even more time around her jiu-jitsu coach, spending more time focusing on those techniques. You know, some of the stuff she was pulling off in the open workouts were nice. And if you saw the countdown show, she had some really nice transitions and moves in there that they were featuring. So, I think that's great. But Shevchenko, man, when she's on point, she's on point. Now, she's naturally a smaller fighter, so maybe that factors in a little bit. You know, Pena has liked to say that she doesn't hit that hard, and that may be true. That may be true. But, man, when she was on point, the way her timing against Holly Holm was just ridiculous. Ridiculous. And I don't think that Juliana Pena wants to make this a striking fight. I don't think, you know, she's been saying that I feel comfortable in that regards. If I have to fight her in the stand-up department, I will. I don't think she wants to do that. But I did lean towards Juliana Pena. That was my pick in this fight. And, I'm not going to go bet my house payment on it. But I do think that she's got a good chance to win this fight. And I love her attitude this week. A lot of times, Juliana on fight week is incredibly intense. I mean, incredibly intense, right? Like, almost standoffish, like intimidating, like, you know, you don't even want to talk to her. She's been less so that way this week. She really has been more open. I know she's doing a ton of media, of course, and I feel like she's speaking out a little bit more. I mean, sometimes that little, you know, cold, hard edge is pretty cool, right? I mean, that attitude is kind of fun. Like, oh, man, look how intense she is. But at the same time, you know, you're trying to get answers. You're trying to read into them a little bit. You're trying to find out what's going on. I think she's been a lot more like that. So I did want to share a few minutes with Juliana Pena this week. This was from our scrum that we had at the open workouts today. And she has a pretty strong message for Amanda Nunes. And I thought this was well played. I mean, in this day and age, right, where you got to be respectful, but you got to call out what you want, right? You got to make it clear, and you got to see if you can bug somebody a little bit. Sometimes you got to get people to kind of want to be on your same page. So I love her message here to Amanda Nunes, so listen for that. And listen also if you can identify the moment when Juliana does get a little bit annoyed with speaking to the media and maybe does revert to that attitude just a little bit.
Juliana, obviously the spotlight around you keeps getting brighter and brighter, bigger and bigger opportunities. Here you are, main event on Fox, probably one fight away from a title shot, handling all the promotion for this. What's the experience been like for you this week?
I think that one thing on The Ultimate Fighter that it got to be prepared for was the media and dealing with this kind of stuff. You got to be a multitasker. Doing the media is a part of the business, and you just got to get used to it and suck it up because this is an entertainment business after all, and I'm an entertainer as much as I am a fighter. So it really doesn't bother me being a main event does not bother me, and I can handle it. It's not anything but something to get used to, and I'm a pressure type of person, and I can handle all types of pressure, so it's not a big deal.
I know a lot of people are looking at this as kind of a striker versus grappler affair. You're obviously a well-rounded martial artist, but at the end of the day, can you look at it that simply that, you know, if you can get your grappling in play, it's your fight. If she's able to get going on her striking, it's hers?
This is my fight, you know, all around. This is my job to get in there and do what I know that I can do. I'm not so much worried about what Valentina does and more focused on what it is that I know I can do. And I'm a gamer, I'm a fighter, and I'm ready to die. And if you're ready to die, you're ready to live.
Should you know, it's an entertainment business, and you know, Ronda being, we don't know, and Misha retired, there's kind of an opening for a star here, right? I mean, the women's division, do you look at yourself as maybe being the person that can do that, or do you even think about that?
Yeah, Gina Carano was the face of women's MMA, and when she went out, Ronda became the face of MMA. Now that Ronda's out, I would love to be that person. I would love to be that role model for these little girls that are looking up to me or looking up for someone to look up to. I would love to fill that role, and I would love to be the face of women's MMA, absolutely.
I've heard you reference Gina a couple times when talking about this whole issue. Do you feel the need to remind fans that she was around?
Gina was a pioneer in women's MMA, and she kind of put women's MMA on the map as far as being a beautiful woman and being able to fight. So I give her all the credit in the world, and I've always looked up to her as far as one of those women that was very beautiful but could fight as well.
So if you can write your own script to beat Valentina and get the title shot, when would you like to contest for the title?
As soon as possible. I'm ready to go. I'm always in camp. I'm always training. I'm training year-round, and I'm ready as soon as possible.
In some ways, is this the perfect kind of, I don't want to say warm-up, but the perfect way into a title fight, knowing the way the champion fights as well?
You know, I asked for a title shot after I beat Kat Zingano, and it wasn't available to me. They told me that Ronda was coming back. So as soon as I found out that Ronda was coming back, I said, I want to fight the best in the world, and Valentina was ranked ahead of me. So I asked for this fight. I got exactly what I wanted. I want to fight the best in the world, and I want to compete against the best in the world. You know, I don't want to fight no tomato cans or no hand-picked fights. I'm a tough fighter, and I want to prove myself up against the best in the world so that I can prove to myself that I am truly the best in the world. So this is a great fight for me. This is my fight to win. And, you know, being that Kat Zingano beat the brakes off of Amanda Nunes and I dominated Kat Zingano, I think that I can, it's fair to say that I can hang with anybody that walks at 135 pounds inside that octagon. Absolutely.
Janina, what's your best point against Valentina?
My determination to win, my will, my heart, my strength. I'm good everywhere.
You're the main event here on Fox, you know, network television, a lot of people will be watching. How much have you thought about what you might say after the fight? Have you prepared for that at all to know that, you know, Amanda is trying to say she's not even defending 135, so you have to kind of get that thing going.
Yeah, definitely. I think that there's a lot of competition still left at 135 pounds that she should maybe consider before trying to run to another division. And, you know, God willing, I get past this fight. I'm unbeaten in the UFC, and I'd rather, if I was a champion, want to clean out my own division before going to a different division. And if there was an undefeated girl fighting at 135 pounds, I would want to test my skills against her. But if that's not the way that she wants it, as long as all you guys know what the truth is, and that's all that matters.
Sorry, I said a couple questions there. The first one was how much have you thought about post-fight and what you might have to say?
I've thought a lot about post-fight, and God willing, I get this win. You guys are in for a treat.
Is this your first time with your new striking coach, Mike Valley?
It is, yes.
Why the change-up?
This is my third camp in Chicago. This is the third time that I've spent a lot of my training camp over there. It was a change of pace for me because I wanted to be closer to my jiu-jitsu instructor. And my striking coach, head coach Rick Little, wasn't able to move out, obviously, with me. But I fly him out. He's out here. He's been with me in Chicago, too, training. And he's still the head of everything. He's him and I together is what got me here, and he'll always be a part of my career forever.
So you still do want to maintain that connection with the old camp back in the Pacific Northwest?
Oh yeah, absolutely. 509 Spokane, Washington will always be my home, and I always will go there, you know what I mean? Sick Jitsu is very much a part of my camp. It's what bred me and raised me as a babe, and you know, it's just awesome to always evolve your game, always develop, always continue to add into your arsenal. And like I said, he's still very much a part of my camp, and I'm still very much with Sick Jitsu, and I'll rep them till the day that I die.
Have you been preparing for the elevation here?
I have. I came out 3 weeks early, and I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to go. I think that I came out with my strength and conditioning trainer too, and he said, you're ready, girl. So just waiting. The only thing left we can do is wait for Saturday night.
What was it like at the beginning, guys, in terms of the elevation, and how much have you adapted, and how does it feel now?
It feels great.
Don't ask Juliana Pena about the altitude. She's tired of that. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. She still got a little bit of that attitude, even while she's in a good mood. She still got a little bit of that attitude. All right. Should say, by the way, Bellator 171 is Friday night. Of course, I'm sitting down Thursday night to record this. We'll have it out as soon as we can. Friday morning for most of you. Friday evening, Bellator 171. Definitely not the card that 170 was or that 172 will be. But I did just want to point out one thing. First of all, if you haven't seen AJ McKee fight, he is fighting on the main card. I'm a big fan of AJ McKee. I think this kid has got a lot of talent. He's had some ups and downs on the way. Not every fight is looked like a future champion, but the guy really, I think, is just fun to watch and very talented. And, of course, the son of Antonio McKee. So he's on that card. That's definitely one to watch out for. And something else that I found interesting was this was the main event is Melvin Gillard and Chidi and Jaquan. Of course, we talked to Melvin Gillard last week. If you didn't hear that, certainly you can't go back and listen to it. But that fight was announced as a 175-pound catchweight fight. Chidi and Jaquan normally fights at middleweight. It was going to come down. Melvin Gillard is making his home now in the welterweight division. He's done with cutting to lightweight. That fight was announced at 175 pounds. Weigh-ins were held earlier tonight, and it's actually going to be a 180-pound catchweight fight now, which I found very interesting. I did kind of reach out to people on the ground in Kansas to try to find out what happened. The weigh-in results, if you look at it, because I'll be honest with you, and maybe this is wrong of me, but my first reaction was, oh, man, did Melvin find a way to be overweight for a 175-pound fight? You know, he said it was only about a 10-pound cut. But if you look at the weigh-in results, Chidi Njikwani came in at 179.7 and Melvin Gillard came in at 178.1. So Chidi Njikwani was the one that was just under the 180-pound limit. Now, it's my understanding that both guys talked about it and agreed, hey, let's do this at 180 and we'll fight there. Unfortunately, I could not find out, normally when that's going to happen, normally when two guys say that, one guy is reaching out because he thinks he might miss weight. Now, it could be a situation where they both just said, listen, man, we're both cutting weight. I mean, this is stupid. It's already a catch weight anyway. Why the hell does it matter what weight we fight at? And it sounds like maybe that's what happened here. But the fact that Melvin was 178 and Chidi was the one that was just under makes me wonder if maybe Melvin was just the guy being the nice guy. So just kind of wanted to point that out to you. Maybe they'll mention it on the broadcast. I found it kind of interesting. My first reaction, I'm sorry. I love Melvin, but he has had a track record of some issues, and I did wonder, oh my God, did something bad happen? Of course, I didn't want it to be that way. I mean, I love when Melvin's on, and this could be fun. Chidi's a big, rangy, long guy, man. So, man, if you look at the weigh-in pictures or the video, man, you'll see a huge size difference between the two. But Melvin said he's not worried about that, And if these two guys are on point, it's going to be a lot of fun. They will stand and trade, and they will bang, and it'll be a lot of fun. But just did want to note that it went from 175 to 180 pounds. Now, back here in Denver. Another fight that I'm really interested in. The co-main event, I should say, Cowboy Cerrone versus Jorge Masvidal. Going to be a great fight, no question about it. I lean towards Cowboy Cerrone. Those of you that may know me well, I'll probably always lean towards Cowboy Cerrone. That's no slight to Jorge Masvidal. Cowboy fights so often, and I've been cage side for so many of the fights and seen him grow from the WC, the UFC, and just have always loved his attitude, his fighting style, everything about it. It's funny because we get asked in interviews and things like that, who's your, just talking casually, who's your favorite fighter? And to be honest with you, it's kind of hard to have a favorite fighter. I mean, there's so many guys and gals that come through the ranks that, both current fighters and past fighters, and we do so many interviews and all those things. It's almost hard to even have a favorite, you certainly develop a relationships with guys and kind of want to see him do well. I mean, there's so many fights where it's like, you've talked to guys so many times over the years, you hate that one of them has to lose. Cowboy is kind of my default answer when people force me to say who my favorite fighter is. I say Cowboy. So love watching the guy fight, and Masvidal, man, the quintessential fighter as well, right? I mean, this dude's just going to come in and bang. Sometimes cost himself by being a little too complacent, I think. And, he does like to counter and move backwards. And I think judges, bottom line, just don't reward you for that. But nevertheless, this fight is going to be great. They both say it's not personal, but they both had a few words for each other in the media. So I think it's going to be a fun fight. I'm excited for it. That said, both these guys are so matter-of-fact about fighting. their interviews are usually just kind of almost make you feel dumb for interviewing them. They're just like, don't overthink it, bro. It's a fight. Quit trying to look for storylines or angles that aren't there. Like, I signed a piece of paper. This dude signed a piece of paper. I love to stand and punch people in the face. He loves to stand and punch people in the face. So we're going to go do that on Saturday night. So won't be sharing that audio with you, but it is on MMA Junkie if you're interested. Bottom line, both guys are down and ready to bang. And I think that should be a hell of a fight. Cowboy loves fighting in Colorado. He did say afterwards, there will be 50 cases of Budweiser delivered to the parking lot for fans after his fight so that they can enjoy that. And then he's actually having an after party somewhere else where there's a whole bunch of other beer as well. So apparently there will be a post-fight tailgate party courtesy of Budweiser if you're going to be in the neighborhood. I guess just look for the RV. I guess another little side note there, Cowboy said the heat went out on his RV this week, so he had to deal with that. But look for that. There'll be a little post-fight party. Too bad I have to work. I would definitely go grab some post-fight beers, although it's cold outside. All right. Somebody I did want to share some audio with, though. Francis Ngannou, another one of our guys right here, right? Another guy that we've kind of seen come up lately. Not necessarily a young guy. Of course, he's it's not like he's coming in at 20 years old or anything. I think he's almost 30 at this point. But in the heavyweight division, that's not necessarily old by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, exactly 30. Pulled that up. And really looks dangerous. I mean, still raw, no question about it. improving with every fight. Looks like he has a bright future ahead of him. Looks like he has incredible physical tools. And, you know, we've talked about his story in the past. If you're not familiar with the story, you know, was born in Cameroon, not much opportunity there in Cameroon. Made his way to Paris, was living on the streets for a while until he found his way into an MMA gym, and the rest is history, as they say. He's had a quick rise up his career, just 10 fights into his professional career. He's already got 4 fights under the UFC banner and looks like the real deal. And is a soft-spoken guy, learning English and learning it well, sends a bunch of his money, from what I understand, back to Cameroon. He's helping establish gyms for underprivileged youth there in his native country. So pretty cool stuff all the way around. And, you know, he fought not that long ago in Albany. And, of course, that was the week that there was the Toronto event as well. And I don't think he got any media at all. I don't think anybody spoke to him whatsoever. And so I thought that was kind of disappointing. And he actually fought on the Fox event where Holman Shevchenko was at, and I really don't remember seeing much out of him then either. So you know, wanted to pull him aside, and fortunately I didn't have to. He was at the open workouts day, and thought you might want to hear the latest from Francis Ngannou, because I'm high on this guy. You know, I really do think he looks like he has the ability to be something special, and has a lot of character as well.
Well, Francis, your career is progressing very quickly. You haven't been in the UFC very long, but here you are on Fox in a big fight. What's the emotion and the feeling like for you?
For me, that was something great, because since when I am young, I dream for something like this. I don't have opportunity in my life. It's so difficult, but I always keep my dream, and I never give up. But today, I'm very happy to have the opportunity by UFC, and then that is why I promise myself to give all my best to do, maybe more than my best.
It may be a funny question, but I know you haven't known what MMA was for that long. Did you know who Andrei Arlovsky was and what he accomplished when you got this fight?
Since when I start MMA, that is when I start to watch the talking about this fighter, and then I go to YouTube, I watch the video, I look some people fight, they say, well, Ken Velasquez, they say Dos Santos, Arlovsky, and that is when I start know them, I start looking of them. But at the time, I'm still dream for the boxing career, to have a boxing career, and I don't think so say one day I can have the opportunity to fight them. And then after that, when USA give me opportunity, I say, why not? Now I go to do my best, and to be the best, you're supposed to be the best.
And a lot of people are saying you can be the best. They're saying they think you're a future UFC heavyweight champion. Does that add pressure to you? Does it feel good that people believe in you? What does that feel like?
He made me happy. He made me strong, because he was my dream before them. I believed that before them. And then when I see a lot of people be associated of my dream, he made me happy and make me strong more again. And then, you know, when you do something what people love, he make you happy. You see that they give the the value of your job, and it was a very good thing for you.
Do you feel like you're the next big superstar in the UFC heavyweight division?
The future superstar, I don't know, but I know I would be the new champion, the next champ for this division.
Is that something you want? Is that something that you would embrace? You would enjoy the limelight, the stardom?
Yes, because it's my dream since long time ago, since I'm young. I watch the movie since when I'm young. I just love fighting. In my country, people love soccer and other things. But since then, I never love soccer. I just love fighting. I love boxing, something like that. And for me, I promise myself to be the best, to give the best. And so it was not something, it was something that I would dream that before.
So Francis Ngannou, I love it. I mean, he's not afraid to hear the expectations out of him, and to know what people are expecting, and to know what people think about him, and he's embracing it. And I like that. You know, some people are a little bit reluctant to grab the spotlight, and I don't think he wants to be Conor McGregor. You know, I don't think he wants to be a movie star, or, you know, endorsements, or, you know, shooting horse racing commercials or whatever. But embracing the fact that, you know, greatness is perhaps expected out of him, and I think that's fantastic as well. Now, he's got a test in front of him. I know that Andre Arlovski has had a couple losses lately, but he is a former champion. He is a crafty veteran, and who knows? Andre might have a little something up his sleeve. He's also got a great team, and Francis Ngannou, powerful, right? I mean, raw, sheer power, but does have some holes in his game. You know, he's still very raw as a martial artist, and I think, you know, you can conceivably put him in a lot of positions he's not used to being in, and you can make him uncomfortable. And, you know, whether or not Andre Arlovski is going to be able to do that, we'll see. But you got to think his team is game plan for it. So, did want to spend a few minutes with Andre Arlovski as well. One of the most underrated comedians in the sport. You know, guy can be intimidating when he wants to be, but also one of the nicest guys as well. He was actually the first person I saw when I got to the hotel this week. He was right there with a big handshake and, you know, hello. And, man, if you watch the Countdown show too, I thought it was pretty crazy. They talked about the trouble that his dog had. Of course, he's super close to his dog man, he's an animal lover. I've started to try and use Facebook a little bit more lately, even though I'm not very good at it and not good at keeping up with it. I'm not good at social media, period. Sometimes I feel like it's a waste of time, but trying to do better at it. And actually friends with Andre Arlovski on Facebook, whatever that means, but see the number of just animal-related posts that he posts. He's worth a follow just for that, or worth friending or whatever you do just for that. He's an animal lover. So if you're an animal lover, the guy posts like nonstop kind of videos and things like that that kind of tug at the old heartstrings, if you know what I'm saying. So he's in an interesting position. Andre Arlovski, you know, has only lost to the very best as of late, and now he's got to face somebody that's an up-and-coming talent. So, you know, is the UFC using this as a match to get Francis Ngannou over? Maybe. Or is this an opportunity for Andre Arlovski to get back in the saddle and maybe take advantage of Francis Ngannou now while he's raw, pick up that big win over him and get himself back on the right track? We'll see. We'll see. But I liked Andre's attitude about it, man. You know, what do you see in this kid? Listen to his answer.
Andre, you've spent your whole life fighting the biggest and baddest dudes on the planet, but there's a lot of hype around this guy as being a nice up-and-comer. Do you see anything special about him?
Except that he's huge, probably really strong, you know, and pretty much that's it. And to me, he looks a little bit cocky.
What did you think when they came to you with this matchup? Because I know you want to get back to the belt, but he's kind of, you know, new.
Listen, I'm not at that position to pick someone. You know, I lost 3 fights in a row. 2016 was a sucks year for me. And I, like I said before, I'm in play of UFC. I'm fighting for UFC. They want me to fight Francis Ngannou. I'm going to fight him.
Why do you think he's cocky?
His comments, you know, like how he talk to people. It's my personal opinion. You know, I might be wrong.
What went wrong in 2016? You said it was a bad year for you.
No, I lost 3 fights in a row. I think it's fucking great. It fucking sucks for me. I was miserable, you know. Good thing that I lost everyone who like in front of me. And one guy, Stipe Miocic, he became a champion. He's a champion right now. And now we're in fight for the title, so.
Do you feel like your back is against the wall, though? I mean, 4 losses in a row?
Three losses.
Well, it could be 4.
No, if it's going to be 4, you can say it's going to be 4. Now, like, I have a great camp, great sparring partners, great coaches, ready to go.
What was the mindset? A lot of times when people do suffer defeats, they look to change things up, but it feels like you believe in the guys around you and you stayed the path.
First of all, I'm not at that age, and I have my personal credo. I never change horses on the bridge, you know, so. Guys who left, who gave me his hands when I was down, you know, I just, it's my personality, you know, and I'm sure Jackson Wink MMA Academy is one of the best in the business, so I'm really happy to be a part of this, and of course I'm very excited, and plus all my coaches that like they like my brothers, you know, they all the time behind me, they support me, and they gonna be for me 100%.
You've seen so many guys come through this game. Is there somebody you can compare Francis to?
Listen, in UFC today, it's like every fighter in heavyweight division, at least every top 15, top 20, I think they're tough. Francis is one of them, and definitely it's going to be a really dangerous fight for me. It's going to be a really tough fight for me, and But like I said, I had a great camp. I had great coaches, sparring partners, great place, so I'm ready to go.
How much have you studied his game, and have you seen, you know, have you seen certain weaknesses that you think you?
No, this, of course, we study his style. I watch each of my coaches. I watch his what the strongest side is. Plus my teammate John Jones, he helped me to study him. He gave me some tips. So other fighters, you know, I'm very excited to be a part of this UFC in Denver. I never fought in Denver, and everything great so far except cold, you know. But I'm good.
He said that he wanted to be a boxer before he became an MMA fighter.
I saw that clip. He's a big fan of Mike Tyson, and he's gonna knock him out at last in the first round. So it's good. I like it. I like his attitude. Yeah.
Do you think he could be a professional boxer?
Listen, he has all purpose to be a boxer. He's big, he's strong, he's pretty high, you know. So, but he's for some reason became an MMA fighter. So we'll see.
You did a little bit of boxing way back in the day. What's your reaction when you see guys like Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz seeking a boxing license?
I supposed to be a pioneer of this, you know. But James Toney, he came first in MMA. He fought Randy Couture. When I signed with Golden Boy back in 2009, I believe 2010, the idea was to build my boxing record and fight one of the brothers Klitschko at that time for big money, but I lost two fights in a row, I was down, and Golden Boy decided, you know, fuck Arlovsky, let's him do MMA. So now, of course, I'm very excited. Obviously, if it's a fight going to happen between McGregor and Mayweather, it's going to be an interesting fight for me, but we'll see. Maybe one day I'm going to box too, maybe.
Yeah?
Why not, you know? I'm like, I can't say this because we have a Reebok sponsor right now. Yeah, just do it.
Where would you put your boxing skills up against today's heavyweights?
One thing?
Where would you put your boxing skills against today's heavyweights? Like Klitschko's and guys like that.
Listen, for each fight, you have to take every opponent seriously, you know, and you have for example, I'm going to fight in the future in a boxing, I'm going to have a boxing match. I'm going to take that, obviously, fight seriously, opponent seriously, and I'm going to take a really good camp for this one, you know, like, probably you're going to sit down with my manager. Listen, it's not going to happen anytime soon, but you have to be serious about everything what you do. It's my opinion.
All right, well, listen. Hopefully that sets the tone for you for UFC on Fox 23. I appreciate you hanging in there with me. I apologize that I'm by myself tonight. I'll be honest with you. I had some plans to try to grab some people. I'm actually here at the host hotel, so there are people around. And I had some plans to try to grab somebody and sit down and bring in a guest, you know, try to keep this thing going in Cold Coffee's absence. But if I'm being 100% honest with you, and that's all we really do on this show, my son has been very sick. He's got the flu. And as many of you know, I have a 4.5-year-old son, and he's been in Mexico since August with his mom, learning Spanish and kind of learning about half of his culture. My wife was born and raised in Mexico, and my son has been spending time kind of learning that culture and learning that language. And he's had flu for a couple of weeks, and to be perfectly honest, he's very tired and lethargic and not eating much and not drinking much. And I know he's going to be fine. I know he's going to be okay. I know it's just the flu and everything will get better. But it kind of rocked me today just seeing him barely. He's usually so energetic and full of life. And all he wants to do is kind of sleep right now because he feels like crap, and he says his body hurts everywhere. And if any of you guys are parents out there, I'm sure you can know where I'm coming from, man. It's the first time he's been sick like this, and for me to be away and not be there and not be able to do much about it has been pretty hard on me today. And to be honest with you, I just kind of wanted to spend some time in my room by myself and still wanted to do the MMA Roadshow because I love talking MMA. And I love the support that everybody gives me. and gives this show and gives Cold Coffee and all those things. I couldn't quite bring myself to go search somebody out and get in that kind of mood, so I kind of had to zone out and roll solo. So hopefully you guys will all forgive me. I've been talking with Cold Coffee. I think I'll be home on the afternoon on Sunday. I think maybe we'll get together that afternoon and do a little and a half action for you there rather than me doing it overnight by myself, so you don't have to listen to me ramble again. We'll get together and do a little post-fight show that way. So anyway, thank you for putting up with me and understanding my predicament this evening. And if you're the type of person that likes to give positive energy or prayers or whatever else it is, I definitely would appreciate it. I want my little man to get healthy as soon as possible. So in the meantime, hopefully you enjoyed this enough and I was able to fill in by myself. And let's look forward to UFC on Fox 23 and get back and talk about it again on Sunday, huh? Thanks for listening.